Yep. Give me a nod when you're ready. Junior's ready. Stand by.
Hey everybody, welcome to this week's episode of Bullets and Bourbon. We have a special guest today. It's Sammy Nelson. Sam and I have been shooting together for a while. We started competing when I was the S6 over at Second Intel, put a call out, asked any of the Marines in the battalion if they wanted to come out and shoot. And he's one of the few that showed up. Showed up with a left-handed Glock, had some shenanigans, didn't do great, but no one does great in their first competition. The most important thing was that he showed up. Fast forward a couple of years, and he's currently on the Marine Corps shooting team. He just, you know, he didn't necessarily medal or anything at the at his first MCMC. He just caught the eye of the team and has been consistently made his way to M class with an asterisk at the time. but you know, caught Scott Rader's eye, brought him to the team, and now here he is. He has completed a full competition season and a full MCMC season. So, Sam, first question for you before we start off. As a native Pennsylvanian, why is Wawa so much better than Sheetz?
Okay, first of all, you're wrong.
Whoa.
We know that Sheetz is better. Higher quality food, better drink selection, better quality gas, usually cheaper gas. So,
I like the sandwiches at Sheetz better.
I feel like Sheetz has like a better selection of like fried stuff.
They do.
But like
you never had a Sheetz quesadilla?
The Sheetz quesadilla does hit pretty hard. That's a good post-match meal.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, I don't know. Wawa, eating Wawa makes me feel a little better about myself because it's not like deep fried and greasy.
It does seem a little better for you, but
it's more bougie.
As far as gas station food goes.
Wawa's like the Whole Foods, so.
That's a good comparison. But the subject today is Dragon's Cup. So Dragon's Cup just finished its third iteration. Sam and I had been eyeing it since, you know, JJ Rakaza and some other like really high profile shooters had been going out there. And it's a match that is in Odessa, Texas, which if you haven't heard of it, it's because Odessa is in the middle of nowhere on the west end of Texas. But is renowned for its stage design and the overall match quality. And that's why it was completely sold out within 10 minutes of the match opening. So we decided to make the trip this year as the start off to the competition season. And that's what we're going to be talking about this episode.
I thought about asking a question, but I don't know if it's politically correct, but I'll just go ahead and ask it. Is it because there's dragons involved in your Asian?
Yeah, obviously. No, I'd say that Sam was he was more the pushing force towards us going.
Okay, so I mean, with that, what pushed you to want to go out there? Like, what brings the draw into this match besides big names and stuff like that?
Honestly, it was seeing everyone posting the videos and like the quality of the match. If you've never been to it, the quality of everything out there is just amazing. I mean, everything from the walls that they use, their target stands, their activators, their swingers, everything. It's all the highest quality materials that you can get. I've never seen another range that invested that much into it.
It's worth noting that it's run by Marco from Motley Capital, and he's the guy who started the Imperium Roots company. So there's a lot of money in the area. There's a lot of money in Odessa in general because of oil. But in addition to what Sam said, it's in the middle of nowhere, and it still has this just massive pull. And it's a level three, isn't it? It's a level three match. So USPSA operates in tier, like your local match is a level one. your sectional, your state match is going to be level two, and then so on and so forth. So outside of the area matches, Dragon's Cup is the only one operating in that kind of purview, and they gave us 14 stages, which most of your locals have maybe six or seven. So it was not only just like the quality of the stages, it was the sheer quantity of it. We shot 400 rounds between two of us.
So you talk about, you know, the props and everything from walls to target tree stands, all that kind of stuff. Would you say a lot of it was brand new or just well-maintained?
I'd say well-maintained.
I'd say well-maintained. Some of it was brand new, but the majority of it was well-maintained. You could tell that they'd used the past few years, but they definitely keep up and rebuild the stuff, repaint everything every year.
I just highlight that because, like, you know, you go to some matches and some stuff just looks like it's used and abused and not really well taken care of. And then it can affect some of the quality of the match. Like if stuff isn't, you know, timing right, if stuff's not going down the way it's supposed to go down, and it's a relative detractor, it shouldn't be, but it can be. And usually whenever you have a match that takes care of the equipment, you know it's going to be quality.
Yeah, it was evident that they took care of it because every stage has had an activator, right? Just about every stage.
Almost everyone. I think there was...
I mean, except for like the all-steel stage. Yeah. The all-steel stage was the only one. I don't think
the bus stage had an activator either.
No, the bus stage did not have an activator.
It was rare when we came across one that didn't have one.
Yeah, so 12 out of 14 stages had activators, and it was like two that were door activators, stomp pads, like just stuff mounted to walls that you had to slap in order to get like a target to pop out. Some of them were dual activators, so you hit one button and then two sets of targets jump out. They had that, like, I forget what they call it, the crazy monkey target that just like bobs and weaves out like crazy. So it was, they went all out. I don't think there's really, they have a slider too.
A
swinger on a slider.
Hmm.
With a hostage target.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Sounds like a lot going on there.
There is a lot.
Squirrel?
Yeah.
All right. So, you know, you guys have been shooting a bunch of different pistols lately before you went back to your open guns in preparation for the Dragon's Cup. You know, typically, like, I mean, I'm the kind of guy that I want to shoot the same platform over and over again just because I want that consistency, but you guys obviously didn't take that approach. How did you manage that, switching between different platforms and different divisions, and were there cobwebs that affected you switching between the different platforms?
So I'll go first. So I shot my Smith & Wesson for tactical games. And then I came back and I shot championships where we're shooting the M18. And then I shot my Glock at RPGI's day and night match. And then I went back to training with my open gun. So I don't think it was as long as there's a plan, as long as you like build in a familiarization period. Every time you switch platforms, there's certain cues, right? There's small variations in your hand placement and your grip pressure that you just need to like get familiar with before you're comfortable with them again in a match setting. So thankfully for Dragon's Cup, we both had QSC, right? We had Tim Hitchak's last match to kind of get the cobwebs out. But I know that Sam, you shot the M18 a lot more before you transitioned back to open. So what was that like for you?
Not fun.
When you're shooting an M18, so why would it be?
Exactly. M18 with 363, what a wonderful combo. But yeah, so going from last season shooting the Shadow the entire season, which was basically an open gun if you have ever seen it, Shadow going to an M18 for all of McMick season, I picked up the open gun in November, shot one match with it, put it back down for a few months, kept shooting the M18, put the M18 down, picked up an M17 and
which is even worse. Or no, well, the M17 is better than the M18. Yeah, that's right.
This is more closer to a Legion, mm-hmm. how we set up. Shot the RPGI day and night match with that, and then picked up the open gun again and shot one match with it, and then with the Dragon's Code.
How comfortable were you just switching over to the open pistol right off the bat?
Fairly comfortable. Not as comfortable as I would have liked, but I would say fairly comfortable. It's a very, I mean, the 2011s are very natural handling, fitting pistol to your hand. Like they fit my hand very well, and my natural point of aim and my natural index is usually there with it. So picking it up after not touching it for a while, I mean, it was like riding a bike, a few reps with it, and it came right back.
Yeah, I would say that just like riding a bike, though, we did start out perhaps a little timidly, right?
A little bit, yeah. I started shooting it like a carry optic shooter, not like an open shooter.
Yeah, so I think both of us are more accurate than we are fast, and that needs to change, you know, throughout the season. But it's not a bad problem to have, because half the people shooting open just don't have fundamentals to begin with.
Mm. Yeah.
It's not money.
Charlie Delta, Alpha yeah. Delta, Delta Delta.
You still need mostly Alpha.
If I learned anything at Marva, a lot of it was Charlie Mike, Delta Mike, Charlie Delta. Mm.
Yep.
So, I mean, speaking to that, like you guys switch between platforms a ton, you know, how many actual practice sessions did you get, or were you using those matches as practice sessions?
So we did two. There was that one day like that. I was just working on Bay 2 by myself. And then you came and like you shot those targets afterwards. So we looked at the match book and we saw that like there were just some crazy partial targets. So a lot of stuff at distance too. But I'd say the practice that was really useful for us, I'd set up a swinger and Sam comes over. And I just have like the smallest sliver of brown showing at the top. He's like, what are you doing to us? And it was a really difficult practice. Like you shot that swinger a lot after I left. There was a lot of shots in the no shoot. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. A lot of shots in the no shoot.
But we figured a lot out. And as a result, like in Dragon's Cup, I shot it clean. I had some no penalty mics on the fixed time. And then Sam, you shot one mic and one no shoot.
Yeah,
and those weren't even on the swingers. Those were just on like close targets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't say close. Man, medium is. I don't know if there were any close targets.
But they weren't the hardest shots that we were taking.
No, you know? Definitely.
It was just stuff that happened.
Just rushing, almost rushing, little overconfidence.
Yeah, a little bit, just calling bad shots.
One of them was a split perf. Like it was one of the ones that was an A zone hit and also a no shoot. But that's a good general principle, I think, is. You know, so our friend Ben took a class from Rob Latham,
mm-hmm.
and Latham's advice is like, you shouldn't practice stuff you know you can do. You need to practice really hard stuff. Like you should practice really frustrating things. And I didn't really implement that until getting ready for Dragon's Cup, just because I knew how many swingers and activators that I knew I need swinger practice. And it honestly paid off. So I think that's going to be a recurring thing for us throughout the summer, is that we just practice really hard, sadistic shit.
I think I'm going to make a bunch of partial, either only A zone or only C zone targets.
Okay. Yeah.
Do some black paint and a cutout.
Yeah. Yeah. That practice, like, if I had gone to Dragon's Cup without doing that in practice, I would not have done as well. I'm sure you'd say the same.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the fact that I didn't have a single mic on swingers. Mostly, yeah. I think Alpha's and a couple Charlies on swingers.
Yeah.
It's showing how much it paid off.
You know, so talking about Odessa and everything, you know, you traveled with 4 open guns, nearly 1,000 rounds, 38 super comp. You know, I've traveled to a ton of matches with a ton of gear and everything. But what did you guys do to really protect your equipment? We all know how open guns are. You know, 2011, you know, the open platforms can be very finicky. What did you guys do really op checking once you guys arrived out there?
So, I mean, so starting from square one, we both invested in like custom inserts for our guns. So they just go inside the Pelican cases and like they'll wiggle around a little bit, but they're all surrounded by foam. We invested in ammo boxes for the ammo. we invested in air, like the foam inserts from Range Panda, they come with little circular cutouts, air tags. So all of our expensive stuff had air tags in it, which was the way to go. Like, it also has the side effect of, like, when you're waiting there, like at the oversized bag luggage, you can actually see it coming, which is really nice. And when we got there, honestly, just clean the guns, clean the mags. You had an issue with your gun.
Yeah, so my gun lost zero somehow. The zero was off by about, I think, 3 inches or 15 yards. Thankfully, they had a test fire function bay there. And I had the people from Mark 7 and Atlas there borrow some tools real quick and was able to get my zero fixed.
Did you, I take it you shot a stage, noticed you were off and went, or did you guys kind of just confirm zero before you shot the match?
We went out and confirmed zero the day before the match when we were walking stages.
Yeah, people kind of asked us, like, so we flew in Thursday and then Friday was just like a chill day for us to like walk stages. But we're just like, hey, there's a bay here. We might as well check zero. And it turned out to be the right decision. So it was the day before we competed, and it was honestly the right thing to do.
Yeah. No, I mean, anytime I'm flying anywhere, it doesn't matter. Like, I will always go to a match if I'm flying and confirm zero. If I'm driving to a match, I'm not overly concerned. But if I know I'm going to be flying, I always want to get there roughly a day and a half before the actual match starts. Then the day before the match, just always confirm zero, because you don't want to be in the middle of your first stage and have three more stages and not have time to zero a gun. It's the worst feeling in the world.
No, yeah, that's awful.
So, you know, Dragon's Cup, we already discussed the level 3 match. It had 14 stages. There is an option to shoot stages on Saturday and Sunday, but you guys decided to do it all in one day. What was your approach to the weather conditions and the endurance aspect of this match?
So you were better prepared for the weather, because I only brought shorts. I thought it was going to be sweltering hot, but it was like as low as in the 40s in the morning.
Yep.
And it would get up into like the 70s, 80s in the afternoon. And then I'm sure if you've seen any footage of the match, the Saturday shooters had to go through a sandstorm. So I wasn't as, I basically like used stuff that I already had. Like I used my little, I had like a handkerchief that I always tie into my carry-on bag. I used that as a bandana. I just got it out. I just wore shorts. But I don't know. What was the weather like for you?
Well, having lived in Texas for a better part of a year, I brought everything that I knew I might need. Mm-hmm. So hoodie, long pants, a net gaiter to put over my face in case of, you know, a sandstorm. Not expecting that there would be at all, but I saw it sitting there and I tossed my range bags. So you never know what might happen.
You jinxed everybody.
I did. but it's a good thing I had it in there. It came in handy.
I would say, like, so something else we, never mind. There's a question about open guns coming up later. But those, the gun covers too, was also it was a good investment to have. And those came in handy during Delmarva too, which talked about, we basically like went back to back for like two shitty weather matches. But we can talk about Delmarva at the end.
It builds character.
I would like a match.
Not really.
I would like a match with nice weather though.
Yeah, but then you'll probably shoot shitty.
I don't know about that.
So, you know, speaking about all those things happening, you know, how did you guys maintain and keep each other focused?
I think we got different approaches. It seemed like you were checking scores pretty often. Yeah.
I was checking scores between you and I.
Okay.
I wanted to see how we were stacked up against each other.
That's fair.
Because that day I knew you were my strongest competition.
In our squad
for sure.
Yeah.
And then I think also out of the day that we were shooting, since we were shooting all day Saturday,
yeah,
I think you and I were two of the stronger shooters that decided to shoot it all in one day. Most of the super squad shot it in 2 days.
Yeah.
Do you guys find yourselves, like, whenever you're being focused, do you guys go internal and just maintain an internal focus or really not socialize, or do you guys still have a social aspect but right before the stages just go internal?
Usually a couple shooters before. Like, there was a point at which you came up to me and you said something to me, but I was like double ear prod at that point. I just kind of like nodded and I was just like,
and I was like,
I'm sorry, dude, like, it's nothing's coming through at this point. I don't know. How about you?
It's usually the same. At a match like that, when our squad is big enough, when I'm the shooter in the hole, or even in the deep hole, that's when I'll start to actually prep. And then when I'm in the hole, that's when I stop resetting and I just focus on me and what I'm going to do. And then just kind of go internal, run through the stage in my head over and over again. Once I'm on deck, I'm getting that walkthrough and then just closing my eyes. And
I think that's an important approach to take. Like, I'm much like you two. And I say that, you know, for the listeners, because I know we've discussed it before, but like, if you're internal the entire match and all you're thinking about is each stage at a time and you don't take a moment to rest, you're going to be burnt out. And then you're not going to perform as high by the end of the match.
Especially with 14 stages.
Yeah.
Like, we got there at what, like 7 in the morning, and we didn't leave until 8 at night.
Yep.
Like, it was a long day because the sandstorm basically shut us down for an hour and a half. So, but in terms of keeping each other focused, I don't know. I went through, like, I started off like kind of slow, and then I like found my groove. And then I, like, because I was shooting so well, like, I guess my standards for myself, like, increased. And so when I started, like, performing below that level, I got really hard on myself. And you actually, I don't know if you were, like, it was something intentional, but you came over, you caught me staring at my phone, and you were like, what are you doing? And I was score hawking. I was making myself feel like shit. But I was just like, all right, I gotta let this go. So after this, like, murderer's row of matches, tactile games, freaking Marine Corps championships, RPGI, Kraken's Cup and Del Barba. Every single one of those was exhausting. Like, every single one.
Yeah.
But you learn something about yourself shooting in those conditions. And for me, there's two states in which are optimal for me. One is like a happy-go-lucky, like really optimistic outlook. And one is like, I'm pissed at myself. And like, honestly, shooting a little angry also works for me. So yeah. those are the two things that kind of work.
Do you guys ever see take like the Chris Hutchison approach or the Joe Farwell approach, where, hey, you got 5 minutes to get over yourself and get over what just happened and fucking focus on what's gonna happen next?
I don't know. I definitely brought my baggage to other stages, but it was more like, dude, you're better than this. Get it together. Like, it was like a, not kind of a negative self-talk. I don't know. What's your like optimal mental state in a match? You've been through a competitive season. You've like kind of figured some things out.
It depends. So I've noticed that sometimes I shoot really well if I'm just kind of like hanging out with the boys, joking around, you know, and then I get up and just shoot my stage and then go back. It's kind of how I'll shoot locals a little bit. I just want to hang out with the guys. And then when I go to majors, if I go, like I said, internal, when I'm a few shooters down the line and then just focus on exactly what I'm going to do, that also helps. So it depends on the match, what it is. I don't want to say that I don't take locals seriously, because I do, but I think there's the priorities of what I want to accomplish are different.
It's more of a learning environment.
Exactly. It's more of a learning environment. And I'd rather build the memories and the cohesion with my team and with my friends out there.
Yeah. You want to be there. Like, you want to be present.
Exactly. I want to be present at that. I don't want to you know, seem like that guy that only cares about winning.
Yeah.
Especially at a local match.
So I got a follow-on question. Last summer was my first time like shooting with the team. And honestly, in a lot of ways, like it was mentally intimidating, because when you're in the same squad as Cardi, Raider, yourself, and like Treat, you know, like guys are just like smashing every stage. There was kind of a feeling as like, I was also like still getting healthy, but there was a pervasive feeling that I was just, if I wasn't doing well, I was just like, there's no point. Like, I'm never going to be that. So would you say that, like, I mean, I think, was there that element when you first started shooting with the guys? Did that ever affect you that way?
I don't know if it really did, just because of the timing of when I got to the team. Because I got to the team right in the middle of Mi'kmaq season, so everyone was gone. And then my first match on the team was a major down in Florida.
That's right.
And I did, honestly, really well at that match, especially for my first match on the team.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of, I don't know, it...
I mean, I'll speak to this. You know, I don't think there's really that much of an element on the team if you're on the team itself, just because we're typically training with each other on a daily basis, and we're critiquing and coaching, and we're just making each other better. We see, you know, you utilize one person as a coach, and they're there coaching you. So you build that relationship between each person to where it becomes cohesive. So whenever you do go out and operate, or you go shoot a match, like, there's none of that tension there. There's none of that. I feel like I'm not going to perform up to their level.
Yeah. I guess that it came out in some of the matches, like, I did really poorly. But I think that's more—it's more of a me thing.
Mm-hmm.
I created a negative feedback loop for myself that just becomes self-perpetuating, and just like I figured it out. I had a crash and burn a few times, but I did figure it out a lot from the last competitive season.
So, you know, we've kind of already hit on this some, but you guys have been traveling from one match after the next, but whether it was like Mi'kmaq season, you know, into Dragon's Cup. You know, you talked about doing RPGI, you know, doing tactical games, doing the Mi'kmaq championships, you know, going to Dragon Cups. How well did doing all that consecutively really prepare you for Dragon's Cup and build your endurance?
You want to go first?
Sure. I mean, going off of Mi'kmaqs, if some of you listeners know what goes into like staffing or working a Mi'kmaq, either being on a team or range staff, you know that there's extremely long days. Sometimes you're working 16, 18, even longer hours per day.
For 2 weeks.
For 2 weeks straight. And quite often on the weekends, because chances are there's going to be bad weather on one of the days, you got to roll a day into the weekend. I think Okinawa and East were some of the later ones, especially East. I mean, some nights I was only getting 3-4 hours of sleep between days. And that going into championships, which was similar for sure, not for 2 weeks straight, but for about eight days straight. That and then moving into RPGI, which was 12 stages all day and then all night back to back, and that doing all that consecutively, I went into Dragon's Cup and I was like, okay, this isn't going to be too bad. Like, it's going to suck a little bit, it's going to be a really long day, but I've been doing this for the past 4 or 5 months, so it's going to be all right.
I kind of want to do a quick segue over into RPGI, you know, we. You know, you said you did 12 stages during the day, and then you did 12 stages pretty much throughout the entire night. How did you stay focused during that, knowing that you had a marathon, you know, all day and all night? How did you build the endurance for that?
So it helped that we had a dinner break.
It did. Yeah, the dinner break. Yeah, some good Mexican food really helped.
Oh yeah. Like we had enough because it's a daylight savings time. It wasn't going to get dark until like 8 or something crazy. So we had time to go out in town and have a nice meal and just like hang out with friends before coming back. But I think there's one point at which we were like two stages left, and I just took my my bump helmet and my nods off. I was like, oh my god, that feels so good. And I think you did it too. Yeah. We're just like, should have done this earlier. It's just small. There's no point. Like, you're not. There's no point in like trying to seem tough or anything. You have to take care of your body with the things that you're doing in this moment, whatever you're choosing to drink or eat, or just like getting off your feet, that's going to help the version of you that's down the line 3 to 4 hours is about to shoot a stage. So I was just consistent. Like even when I didn't feel like I wanted to eat or drink, I forced myself to a Dragon's Cup. And that's one of the things you take, like tactile games, right? Every single stage, you eat something afterwards. And you bring you bring a variety of things, right? Like if you don't want to eat one thing, then you got to put something in your body. So it's those small things, just taking care of yourself.
So you guys both did very well. You shot above 85% of the top. You shot 85% or better of the top shooter, which was last year's Open National Champion, which was from the Army Marksmanship Unit, Aaron Eddins. How are you viewing this match performance, given it's just the beginning of a long summer season?
I mean,
honestly, are you taking it as just, okay, this is a benchmark and I need to improve from here? Like, what's the view?
It's a big confidence booster. I don't think either of us, did we have goals going in, or was it just like just survive, right?
I think it was mainly just survive.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, I had my goal of beating you. Didn't quite meet that goal. 100% away.
Right. You've had a long reign of victories. So
yeah, it's time for you to have some.
It is.
So basically what you're saying is fuck off, Sam. Let me win some.
No, it's good. Honestly, that's part of what made the trip so fun, was that like there was a certain, like when you started shooting with me, like I was still shooting production and you were still figuring things out. And then you like you closed the gap really quickly. And there was a period of time in which we overlapped. It didn't feel like that long, because then you started shooting carry optics. I was still in production and then I got hurt. And, it's been so long since I feel like we've really gone back and forth.
It has. It's been a while.
And it's like, I think we said this in the beginning, it wouldn't have been the same if only one of us shooting open. The fact that both of us are shooting it, the fact that both of us are using each other as a benchmark, like kind of sucked that we weren't able to squad together at Delmarva, but we're still like, you still came and like told me how your stage went and stuff. We still compared notes. But I don't know. It's interesting. I didn't get into open thinking that I was going to like start bringing home a bunch of hardware or whatnot, but a trophy is coming back from Dragon's Cup. You would have one too if you had a classification.
So dumb.
He was unclassed and he came in 16th over in the open. There's another couple plaques coming from Delmarva. I think it's just, it's pretty gratifying that, after getting healthy and like after watching everyone else like improve around me, that like things are finally starting to come together. The way I look at it, I'm sure the way you look at it too, is like we still got an entire competitive season ahead of us and we're going to keep pushing because there's still like another 15% before we catch up to Edens. There's Siler out there. Like there's still, that's what competition's about. Like, we could just sit here and be fat and happy and be like, man, we did really well at Dragon's Cup, but realistically there's a lot more ahead of us.
So are you taking the typical officer snobbish approach, sticking your nose up and saying, hey, peon, I beat you?
No, I think, I don't know. Right now it's like, I think I'm looking forward to us going back and forth this summer.
All right, it's gonna be back and
forth. Yeah, it's gonna like it's good. It's motivation, you know. Like you got to have somebody. I mean, yeah, I think there is a part of it. Like Sam doesn't want to let an officer beat him, much less a crippled 30-year-old Asian dude. I don't want to let him win because he talks so much shit when he wins.
He doesn't want to get beat by his own gun.
That's true too.
And so, do you think it's kind of like a similar approach, like how a team format is? Like, so you two are battling back and forth just to like maintain a level, whereas in a team match you're not battling with each other, but you're trying to maintain a level of consistency so you don't let each other down. Do you think it's somewhat like similar instances there?
Yeah, there's it's more friendly rivalry, I say, is where it's at. Like it's good.
Definitely.
The thing about open is like, there's a lot of shooters, and they're either like, it's either that they're old, right, and they just have the money, or they just have the money. But like, I mean, we both started shooting irons. Like we both have fundamentals pretty down pat, and I think there's the movement and athleticism is kind of getting us ahead. So yeah, I think there's still a ceiling to be pushed there. We still got beat by some really good shooters out at Dragon's Cup, and there's going to be even more open nets.
Yeah, 85% of Edens at Dragon's Cup is trying to crawl onto the 95% of them for nationals. That's the goal.
Yeah, but
let's see.
But also, like looking at the points too, like we shot. That's really freaking clean for that match.
Yes, it is.
Really, really, really good there. So I don't know. I'm interested to hear what you think. Delmarva was harder for me mentally than Dragon's Cup.
I'd say it was the opposite for me.
Really?
I also spent, I mean, I worked staff for Delmarva, so I helped build some of the stages, and I spent an entire day just walking the 10 stages that were out there. And I took videos of each one. So even though the weather was absolutely terrible, probably the worst conditions I've ever shot in, on Friday when we shot it, I knew my stage plan for every single one. I didn't have to, the stage plan that day, I didn't have to stage plan out in the rain. I knew what they were.
Yeah.
So all I did was walk up to a stage. During our 5-minute walkthrough, I get like 2 walkthroughs in just to refresh myself. And then when I was the on-deck shooter, which was, I mean, only 2 or 3 shooters later most of the time, because there's only 6 of us in our squad, I would get a couple walkthroughs and then take my rain gear off. I would keep my gun in the bag and walk up and just shoot the stage. And however I did is how I did. And
yeah,
that was that.
Yeah, I was really fucking miserable in the morning. Like I was not a happy camper. I started off like 2 stages strong. And then I started like making mistakes and like doing stupid shit. And then I reset myself over lunch, and then I shot angry in the afternoon, and then that turned out okay. But no, just being soaked through.
I never said I wasn't miserable. I just,
yeah.
Just didn't let it affect you.
I just suffered through it and went internal.
Yeah. I guess. Yeah. Go ahead.
So, I mean, kind of looking back at Delmarva, Dragon's Cup, all these good performances that you guys have been putting on, and refocusing on what's next, which is Area 6. What specifically are you guys working on now for Area 6?
I guess, like, what I'm sure you've done the same thing I have, looking at your Delmarva and your Dragon's Cup footage, but what are things that, because I mentioned like trigger freeze to you.
Yeah, so trigger freeze didn't affect me a whole lot, but just enough that it bothered me a little bit. So going to be working on that. I worked on that a lot today, actually. I think we ripped some triple bill drills. I had the ammo. And then working this overall aggression is a little difficult for me, having gone from carry optics to open. I'm trying to break myself out of shooting open a carry optic shooter because I'm used to trying to go for, you know, 95% alphas at a minimum, to now allowing myself to get Charlies. And you don't want deltas, but I mean, deltas don't hurt near as much.
Yeah. For me, it's, I've noticed that upon entry or after wide transition, I tend to get trigger freeze real bad. So that was something I worked on yesterday, just a dry fire. And then something I plan on working on tomorrow when I'm out at the range. But yeah, it's the same thing. Like as a carry optic shooter, I have an overall tendency to just be really slow and accurate. And while that is help, that has paid off for both of us so far, we're gonna plateau real quick if that's the plan. Like, because comparing ourselves to like the stage winners at Dragon's Cup, we're still off the pace by 2 to 3 seconds, you know.
All right,
so we gotta close that gap if we're gonna contend.
So you guys have anything else? I mean, you guys basically talked about how awesome you were for the past hour. I'm kidding.
Yeah, it's good affirmation, but
yeah, no, I'm happy for you guys. Like whenever I score hawked some, and like whenever I saw the results, I was just like, holy shit, this is gonna be good. This is gonna be a good season for both of y'all. And I'm excited to see where not just both of you guys, but where everybody on the team gets up to, because like you guys are crushing it and you guys are going to keep crushing it. And like seeing where the program started years ago and to where everybody's at now, it's exciting.
Yeah, no, it really is. And you guys got a really great group this summer.
Right.
And you're going to some awesome, like they're going to be in Texas for Area 4 and then Montana for Area 1.
Ooh, that's going to be awesome.
Unfortunately, I won't be at those matches, but man, really excited for you guys. I'm excited for us to, you know, travel together and shoot together this season. But yeah, it's a blessing to be healthy and be able to travel and like go out there and do good stuff.
Hell yeah. Well, do you guys have anything else you want to leave the listeners with?
Are you
shaking heads now? Okay.
No, I think we're all set.
Awesome. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. If you guys want to learn more about what the Marine Corps shooting team is doing, how they're training and how they're performing, please reach out. We'll put you in contact with the right personnel. If you know, want to know what matches they plan on being at, hit us up too. And we'll give you the update on that. But other than that, hope you guys have a good one.